Backseat Producers, episode number 90, Eddie and the Cruisers. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Yes, we are. And holy crap, before we do anything else.
You have got to get this out.
I gotta get this out before it leaves me. Laura Roslin kicked some ass this week.
That was awesome.
I have no idea when this episode is gonna drop. So
It'll be
the episode where they wrap up the mutiny plot.
Wow.
Oh my god.
That whole episode was phenomenal. The two episode arc was just so great.
Lena fell asleep through it on Friday and she was watching it on Saturday. I walked into the room and she's like, "I'm getting pissed off at this episode." And I'm like, "Really? I thought it was awesome." She's like, "No, it's so good. I'm getting angry."
Yeah. I would have reached to the screen and beat Tom Zarek with Gata's leg with Gata's stump. Oh, yes, that
woman deserves awards.
Many
awards.
And what's really sad is she will now get awards because of what she's doing on Grey's Anatomy.
That sucks.
She's actually doing
good stuff.
Really good stuff because she's playing a woman. She's playing a doctor with Asperger syndrome, mm-hmm. and doing it right. Doing it right, just absolutely right.
Did she threaten to blow any star craft out of the air in Grey's Anatomy?
No, she did not.
Did she have an
uncomfortable... I'm coming for you!
Did she have an uncomfortable sex scene with Bill Adama? That was a little awkward.
That was a little awkward. that show just... I can't wait to see how it all wraps up.
Oh my god. I haven't been... I was excited about it, but... I could wait.
Friday nights are nice.
The first Friday night in a long time where I was like, I can't wait until next week.
Yep.
And then the preview with Ellen Tye is, oh my god.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's just awesome. We got more people joining in the chat room. So,
oh god, it's Josh. That guy's a dick.
So tonight we're going to talk about
Eddie. Well, hold on. Next week we're going to talk about Mulholland Drive.
Yes, Mulholland Drive next week. The week after Coraline.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Is that still?
Yes, but from what I hear, we're probably going to expand it out into children's movies that aren't actually children's movies.
Okay.
So it might spill over a little bit into Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, I'm all over that. You know what? I'll sing the whole thing in the background while you guys are talking about it. I love Nightmare Before Christmas.
ESP's musical episode. Ching.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, speaking of BSP's musical episode, I was talking with Julie and I sent her an IM and I said, you know what? I think I just got a little geekier. Just in the last 5 minutes, I out-geeked myself. What was it? There was something about Battlestar Galactica. And for some reason, the Team America song, America, you know which one I'm talking about. In my head, I rewrote it, Galactica, frack yeah.
Wow.
And I started rewriting the whole song in my head.
Wow.
It was pretty phenomenal.
It was probably the crowning moment of your life.
It was... I geek peaked.
It's all downhill from here.
It is.
All right, so Eddie and the Cruisers.
Eddie and the Cruisers. This was my choice.
Really?
Surprise, surprise. All right, high level, what did you think?
I enjoyed the movie.
Okay.
It was a decent story. I hated all of the music. All of it. I was like, ugh. And Melina, at one point, she was working on the couch on her laptop. She's like, you need to turn this down, because that's bad.
Really?
Yeah.
The music's great.
Okay. It was all right. I mean, I enjoyed it.
The point of the music, I mean, the music's kind of weird because it's supposed to be music from the 60s
right.
That's ahead of its time.
Right.
Because it's not really music from the 60s for the most part. I mean, there's some of it that is. Some of it is obviously 60s influenced. But there's big chunks of it that's more 80s music than it is 60s music.
And then the whole flashback thing was—it's kind of like time travel, though. So
I was gonna say, Mr. Time Travel, I thought you'd be all over that.
It was kind of giving me with the almost time travel thing, but so I enjoyed it. It was all right. I thought it was a great concept, poorly executed. How about that?
Interesting. Would it surprise you to know that this was originally a book? This was originally a novel.
Actually, yes. It would surprise me. Because typically novels have more thought-out endings.
Well, I've not read the novel, okay. So I can't really speak to that. And there could be large portions of the novel that are gone.
Yeah, because the ending was, like, really lame.
It was supposed to be kind of... I wouldn't say lame. It was supposed to be kind of open-ended. But then there was a big reveal at the end.
Whoa, there were two! Ah!
And, hey, there was a sequel. Go figure.
From what I hear, the sequel ought not have been.
Oh, man. You know, at one point I had seen the sequel. And I got done watching the movie early, and I got it from Netflix. The Netflix copy of this movie is a two-sided DVD. One side is, of course, Eddie and the Cruisers. The other is Eddie and the Cruisers 2. I got done early with Eddie and the Cruisers. I still had some time before I needed to send it back. So I flipped it over and started listening to watching Eddie and the Cruisers 2. I made it through about 25 minutes of it.
Really?
Yeah. And it was like, I paused it to go to leave the room, and I came back in. It was like, I'm just gonna find something else on. I wonder if Ellen's still on. You know? It was like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That bad, huh?
Yeah.
Ellen beat it.
Except I think that Oprah was on, so, and it was still preferred.
Ooh,
over.
Which episode?
I don't know.
All right.
I didn't actually watch Oprah or Ellen, but I'm just saying. The sequel is not good. By any stretch.
Don't worry, I will avoid it.
There is a quote from the guy who wrote the novel. Mm-hmm. And he was asked, he said, somebody once said that Eddie and the Cruisers is, and I'm gonna mess up the quote, is like the Citizen Kane of this type of movie from this era. And I'm not going to disagree with that. But what I will say, is Eddie and the Cruisers 2 is a talentless abomination.
I'm still reeling from the first statement.
Yeah. He didn't claim to say it, but he wasn't going to disagree with it because it was like he's probably still getting money off of it.
Oh. Part of the quote is that he said, no, I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with... Somebody has said this,
okay.
And I'm not going to disagree with
that's
that.
That's the quote. I thought you were saying that. You I am not notable.
I'm not saying
like,
that.
Whoa,
I was
Tony.
All within this quote. This is all in the big quotes.
It was a big statement otherwise.
No. I enjoy this movie. I'm not going that far.
The chat room would like to point out that they hear us better in the back. Which is true.
It is true.
Mostly. Like when they come at night.
Yes.
Sorry. Anyway. All right.
Okay.
Let's tear into this.
On to the movie.
Tom Berenger looks like James Franco. All right, let's just get this on the table right goddamn now. I was like, that is James Franco, Tom Berenger.
I didn't see that, but now that you're saying it, I can see it, yeah.
And Joe Pantoliano had hair at one point.
White hair.
This was shocking to me.
That was pretty terrifying. Words and music, man. Words and music. Whoever that is, you got it right.
The word, man. Tom Berenger sucked. I didn't like him.
It was an understated character, and he kind of played it that way. But he's not. He's not a real hammy, overacting kind of guy.
What do you mean? The Substitute wasn't the pinnacle of human creativity in the last 10 years?
I think I saw that.
They made two.
I think I saw part of that.
I saw both of them.
Okay. I guess I feel okay for you with that. let's see.
Eddie was awesome.
Michael Perret, Eddie.
That guy was awesome. Except when he was singing. He wasn't so awesome when he was singing.
Because it wasn't him.
Because it wasn't him. And
yeah, it was just lip sync. Yeah, he makes some very unusual faces when he sings. When he pretends to sing.
Every other time he was awesome.
Yeah,
that guy was cool.
And the whole character surrounding Eddie was, yeah. It just oozed cool. He was just that guy.
He was that guy.
And he drew people to him. I mean, that was kind of the point, mm-hmm. of Eddie and the Cruisers.
Right.
So,
what I loved is, like, this movie was made early 80s.
Yeah, yeah, 83-ish.
They had the token black guy, mm-hmm. who has no lines the entire movie.
And you know why?
He doesn't speak.
Because he's actually a musician.
So?
He was brought in just to have some musical cred to the group.
That's yeah. Hilarious.
He's actually a sax player. No lines, and he's the guy that dies of the drug overdose. Yeah. We're not a little bit racist in this at all.
I was like, wow. Way to go. What else? The chick was annoying.
Sorry, I just read something in the chat room. And
a source who wishes to remain anonymous said that this BSP is the Citizen Kane podcast being recorded at this time about Eddie and the Cruisers.
I cannot disagree with that.
I don't disagree with that either, honestly.
All right.
What are you saying? Just go ahead and launch into your synopsis. I got nothing else.
Okay, synopsis. The story is set in the early 80s. It starts off in the early 80s.
Yes.
And there is a television producer, kind of...
sort of news source.
Documentarian. Let's just call her a documentarian for lack of a better idea of exactly what the hell she was doing.
all of the guys in the room have big 70s hair.
Yes, they do.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The chick documentarian, her eyes are so far away from each other that it's freakish looking.
That is like Ellen Barkin.
3 inches between her eyes. That is a long damn space on a face. Holy crap.
That's Ellen Barkin. She's actually been in a lot of other stuff, too.
Huh.
Surprising you with this comment. So she's convincing these guys that she's making her pitch for her next documentary. Mm-hmm. Her documentary is going to be about Eddie and the Cruisers.
Surprise.
Yeah. The story is that Eddie and the Cruisers had one album in the 60s. They had made a second album. It was in the studio. Something happened. Eddie left the studio one night. The next morning, his car had gone over a bridge. His body was never found. They went back to get the tapes of the second album. The tapes are missing. Shock and awe. So
that's when she cooks up the conspiracy
theory. Yeah, she has now created a conspiracy theory that she is going to use to sell this documentary.
Well, part of her conspiracy is the name of the second album is the name of a poem by some guy who fakes his own death to get away from his life.
Yeah, it's the name of the second album was to be Season in Hell. Mm-hmm. The poet is Arthur Rimbaud, and he's a real poet.
Right.
Yeah.
And he really does fake his death.
And he really does fake his death. So that part of it's real.
Everything else is fake.
What's interesting in doing a little bit of research after the fact?
You did research?
Well, you know, IMDb.
Okay. I did research too. Then.
That and I looked up the lyrics to one of the songs at one point because I wanted to make sure I get the words right when I was tweeting lyrics all week. Some people, when the movie came out, actually thought that this was a true story. Going so far as saying, I've heard of these guys. When I was a kid, I remember my older brother taking me to one of their concerts.
That's awesome.
Kind of thing. You know?
That's awesome.
So people like were full on believing that this is real. And this is, you know, the movie they're watching is actually a documentary.
That's awesome.
So it turns out, no, none of that's true.
It was pretty lame. The music was good, mostly, but the story was kind of ridiculous. The acting was largely terrible. Largely terrible.
Stingray watched The Wrong Side.
I don't think he did.
Then again, he also likes Back to the Future, too. So
I like Back to the Future, too.
Better than the first one.
I like Back to the Future 2 better than the first. Best
There's no accounting for taste, though.
Best way to get out of here. So, anyway, this is what kicks off the story, and so the story largely centers around Tom Berenger, whose name I'm not going to remember.
They call him Word Man.
They call him Word Man because he is a huge poetry buff.
And he's when we catch up to Word Man. In the quote present. Yeah, in the 80s. He is an English teacher at a high school of some type. They come to him asking questions about Eddie. Is he still alive? What happened to the tapes? What do you know? Do you still talk to anybody from the group? That kind of thing. He pretty much writes him off. That part of his life is over. Blah. He finds out that people are coming to other members of the band, so he starts kind of doing his own little
investigation.
Yeah, almost like his own little vision quest to kind of find out exactly what's going on, because it just all seems really weird to him that people are bringing this all up now. That it shouldn't be this way.
It's also weird because like there's like this huge revival of their music from 20 years ago on the radio. Like
yeah.
When he pulls up to work and you're following him in the car, like the opening scenes, it's the DJ's like, and they're super popular, the most popular they've been in 20 years. He's like, dude, what's going on?
Yeah, it's just weird. So he kind of goes on this same quest along with parallel to this documentarian, and we don't see all of her stuff.
Right.
We kind of at this point we kind of follow him through the rest of the story, and he does occasionally run into her, and their paths do cross, and they kind of fill each other in on the pieces they've missed.
Right.
But
she doesn't do anything.
It's weird. Technically, in this movie, it's really weird that they start the movie with her, because in the storytelling of it, they start it with her as the viewpoint character. But once we go to Wordman being the viewpoint character, he pretty much is through the whole rest of the movie.
I always thought that I didn't have a problem with that, just because it was like the impetus of the story was her. Like, I didn't think that any of the stuff would get drudged up again, because
it was almost like a prologue.
Yeah.
And I hate prologues.
It's obvious that when his house gets looted, Doc's house gets looted, What's-Her-Face's house gets looted, mm-hmm. that it's obvious it's the people for the documentary looking for the tapes.
Right.
So. I would like to point out to the conversation in the chat room that Neverending Story is still as good as it was. That is all.
And it had a dragon that was a dog.
Yeah, Valcor. It was
awesome.
I used to live on Valcor. That was awesome.
That's just weird.
I guess. Anyway, I don't disagree with you, Stingray. The looted houses were ridiculous and really not necessary to the plot. I don't really see what they added. Because it's like, he could have just as easily gone to see Doc without having his house looted. Because Doc called him out of the blue. Could have just gone and seen Doc, and Doc's like, hey, I talked to the reporter chick. She's looking for the tapes. Yeah, they're looking for the tapes. Okay. No breaking and entering required.
Doc was looking for the tapes too, though.
Well, you don't. He was looking for the tapes, but you don't really get. You don't really see how far he'll go to get them until later.
Yeah, but I never see.
It because was, he was like, "Yeah, my house got looted too."
But even so, the implication was that the looting of the houses was the work of the documentarians, but. There was also the idea that it was somebody else.
Really?
And heavily implied that it was Eddie. Especially by the time Wordman goes to talk to... What's her name?
I don't know, the chick. The chick in the band.
Yeah, because...
Joanne?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. He goes to Joanne and... Joanne confesses to him that she's been seeing Eddie, sort of.
No.
Something's been going on.
Weird things have been happening, and it reminds me of Eddie.
Yeah.
All right, that's more accurate.
Somebody calls and hangs up. Playing one of their songs, hanging up.
Somebody driving
the same car.
Doing the same light flashy thing.
Yeah. Whoa. So there's the the idea that maybe Eddie's doing something. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make a lot of sense that Eddie would just toy with somebody that way.
Yeah, that whole plot line. This was my biggest problem with the movie. That plot line. I was cool with the whole conspiracy of like, is Eddie dead or is he not dead? Because that was kind of a cool storyline where they set it up with the poetry thing. And it's like, all right, we're either going to get to the end of the story and he's going to come back and do something cool. Or it's just going to be he is actually dead.
Right.
And you're going to know one way or the other. All right, I was fine with that. Then they start introducing this whole, well, he's coming back and he's doing weird things to the chick. Okay. All right, I'm fine with that until the conclusion of that plot line. Wait, are we spoiling this now?
Is it a 26-year-old movie?
Okay.
Yeah, let's go ahead and spoil. I mean, we've spoiled quite a bit of it as it is.
Yeah, fine. So, when the final scene shows up and Joe Pantoliano gets out of that damn car.
He doesn't get out so much as he's dragged out.
Cumberbatch drags him out. I'm like, what the hell?
They actually established that early in the movie, though, because they said that he did voices. He's the voice guy, and he does voices on the radio, and so when he sounded like Eddie, there was only two people that could have been at that point,
right?
Eddie or him, from what they established in the movie.
I wasn't paying that close attention.
And that was what we alluded to earlier. That was the lengths that he was going to try to get the tapes, because he figured if anybody had the tapes, it was her.
Yeah, well, he was right.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah. Stupid broad. Anyway, so I don't know. That whole plot line I thought was really dumb.
I didn't. I don't know.
Because it just felt so removed from the rest of the story. Because it was like, Wordman, and he's like, weird stuff's going on, let me go reunite with everybody. And it was just like a reunite story. That would have been fine, because... they had some history. And then the flashback thing was kind of cool, where he would meet up with somebody and talk to him, and then he would remember the things that happened between them.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was this weird disconnect with Sal. Like, the last time he talks to Sal, Sal's like, you ruined the band, I hate you.
Yeah.
And then the next time they talk, he's like, oh man, I was like complimenting you in this interview and all this other bull. And it's like, what? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, it's the character. See, for me, this movie's about the characters. I think the characters were true throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The character of Sal, he was an opportunist.
He was skeezy.
Yeah. Joe Pantoliano's character was also an opportunist.
And he was also skeezy.
It was the levels that they were willing to go to
Sal was
make the opportunities. Skeezy. Yeah, I mean, Sal was just trying to make his way. He was doing what he could to continue doing what he always did, what he loved to do. He wanted to be a star. And the fact was, he was a legend in his own mind more than he was anything else. Joe Pantoliano's character, that dude was just in it for the money. He just wanted a payoff.
Well, what else is there?
Well, you had the two sides in his character and Sal. Sal wanted
the fame,
and he wanted the money.
Right.
I mean, that was where those two characters lie.
the best scene in the movie is kind of the clash between that side of things, the what do we get out of this side,
mm-hmm.
and Eddie, the first time that they meet Tom Berenger.
Yeah.
That was a cool scene.
There was a couple of really cool scenes, a couple of really cool character moments where they kind of turn your expectations a little bit mm-hmm. on what's going on. One is that scene. Because you don't really get a feel for what Eddie's about.
Yet.
Until you get to the scene where they meet Wordman for the first time.
Right.
You start to get him a little. You're starting to get a taste for who Eddie is. And I think that's really the first time you even hear him talk. Is at that point. And he basically dresses down Sal for...
Yeah, that was awesome.
For ruining the song. Because he wouldn't put timely pauses into the music. And Wordman shows him some poetry.
I love me some poetry. So
and the poetry and the poetry that they were referencing through the movie was Rambo, mm-hmm. which you know they were all playing
so
to that.
You know what was really weird though? They go to the college and Wordman.
That scene at the college was the other one that I was going to get to.
Starts making out with Eddie's girlfriend, and then. So he's doing the interview with the chick, and he's telling her about the time, and then he's like, me and Eddie, I wanted to leave, and Eddie told me to come on a walk. And it's like, why was there no flashback for this?
Yeah.
So it's like, why is he telling us about, well, Eddie's like, words and music go together. I need you like you need me. And it's like, why are we not hearing this from Eddie? Why are we talking about this and not seeing it?
And I think the only explanation for that I have is one of two things. One, it's not true. It's building the legend of Eddie
uh-huh.
even more. Or hearing about it and hearing him tell the story is far more interesting than watching it happen.
Oh, I don't know, man. I'd
really watching 3 or 4 minutes of two guys walking alone together, talking about words and music.
Yeah, you could have shot it so it looked like time passed a lot of time.
Yeah,
like it just started off at
oh, I'm with you, but
dark.
But the implication then is also it didn't really happen.
Yeah, I guess that's.
I mean bad. That you could take it that way too.
All right, let me get your opinion on something.
All right,
we've talked about pretty much the entirety of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is a point Melina brought up to me while we were watching it. I want to get your opinion.
All right.
People looked weird in the 80s. Just in general.
What do you mean people looked weird?
People looked weird. There were so few characters that were on the screen that I was like, man, that guy's weird looking. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of like this whole thing. And then Melina said the same thing, and I was like, damn it, you're right.
In the 80s, we weren't afraid of ugly people.
I fear them now.
If there's anything that reality TV has taught us, is that ugly people do not finish first. Ugly people get voted off the island first. Therefore, it's only the pretty people that
Tool
count.
Tool Academy. Greatest show concept ever. We'll never watch it. So, what have you got on this? It's only been half an hour. Sarah, you cannot possibly look the same as you did in the 80s. I call bullshit.
What I think is really interesting at this point is the chat room is talking about has carried on a conversation
to Bowie
that is completely different from anything that we've talked about.
Oh, scroll. There was actually a comment about why we didn't hear from Eddie. I just saw it before.
It was Stingray. He said it's because the movie sucked.
No. Maybe. Because the movie sucked. That's why we didn't hear from
Eddie. Yeah.
Okay, all right. You win this one. I have a point to make here. All right, go ahead, Stingray. What's your point? I'll fill the dead air while you talk. I have a problem when I watch movies now that sometimes I'll fade in and out of what people are saying or doing,
mm-hmm.
and try and see who they look like in my life. When Word Man meets up with the drummer in the 80s present,
mm-hmm.
I was like, holy crap, that's my brother. He's got the long hair, like the big face. I was like, oh my god, that's my brother.
Everybody had the rapist glasses in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm wearing those now, actually. It's cool.
One thing that I liked about this movie also was it was Wordman's story, but they didn't make him this untouchable character throughout the movie. It wasn't like everything... Because it was his story. He was relating his experiences.
Right.
And when they get to the death of the saxophone player, especially when he's talking to the drummer.
Mike. It's not actually Mike, but that's my brother's name.
Okay. So when they're talking to Mike,
mm-hmm.
when Wordman's talking to him, he doesn't realize, Mike pretty much flat out frickin' tells him.
It was hilarious.
You're
how naive are you?
Yeah, you still don't get it. I mean, come on.
That was awesome.
That was a really cool moment because it was like it called into question Wordman as a reliable source.
He's not. He's dumb.
Yeah. Well, he was naive. He was a kid. Dumb. He was a kid. He was naive. He was fresh out of high school or fresh out of college.
Uh-huh.
Didn't have life experience. I mean, that was the one thing that Eddie dressed him down for at the college concert. I mean, he just ripped into him.
I think it was more because he was making out with his girlfriend.
You know, that's not the way he attacked him, though.
I don't know. I guess. I thought it was just to humiliate him.
Oh, and it did.
What? Well, yeah, but I think it was humiliating because he was making out with Eddie's girlfriend.
I don't know if it was. I don't even know if it was so much that.
Really? Because I didn't think that there was any sort of like weirdness or animosity until that happened, and then Eddie was like, "Yeah, you suck."
I think it was because he was using that place and that environment to get his girl.
Really? I thought it was more.
Because I mean, that was when they showed the two of them together. That was the whole gist of his trying to get in her pants. Was that you're so much better than this? You know, you're so much better than that life you live. You could be here. You could be among these people.
Really, I thought it was more of a.
And then she called him out. She's like, only because I'm with you. I'm good enough because if I'm here, then it's good enough for you
to be with a girl like me. Character moment for Eddie because. Like, the entire thing, you get this kind of deification of Eddie. Like, oh, he's... Not only is he musically brilliant, but everything he says is golden. And then in the end, you find out, well, people didn't like his music because it was too advanced. Too advanced for the time. But when you get right down to it, he's just a petty ass.
Yeah. He was a big baby.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he ran off. That's why he ran off at the end. Because I don't know that we ever really got to the big spoiler, is that Eddie's alive.
Oh, I don't care.
Hence the sequel, Eddie and the Cruisers 2, Eddie Lives.
That must be dreadful.
Now, if you have any bad feelings about Eddie and the Cruisers, let me explain to you a little bit of why Eddie and the Cruisers 2 is so god-awful, is ridiculously worse. It was made in 1989, the end of the 80s.
That was a good year for me. I was six.
I graduated from high school in 1989.
Really?
Yes. So, well, yeah, this will be my 20th anniversary, my 20th high school reunion. That I'm not going to.
Years later.
Child.
Toss that out. Just toss that out of the table.
Movies at the time were still full on 80s movies with all of the 80s hairstyles and clothes and bad choices that went along with all that stuff. The character of Eddie, first off, he's got this porn star mustache that he's sporting. He is a construction worker in Canada, and he goes by the name Joe West.
I don't want this anymore.
Wait. It gets worse. The story starts where unnamed music channel is having a contest for an Eddie lookalike.
It'll be funny if he doesn't win.
Wait. For an Eddie lookalike. And it's time to coincide with the release of Season in Hell because they have the tapes now.
Wow. This sounds disastrous. But you know what? We need to have a backseat producers lookalike contest.
That is awesome.
That is,
I'm with you.
Brilliant. The only problem is that Tony number 2 won't have his, but that's fine.
That's all right.
Whatever.
You know what? We need to get a Tony number 2 lookalike contest.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Send in your pictures. If you think you look like him, we will judge the person who looks most like him. And the brilliant thing is you don't know what he looks like.
I'll tell you what. Here we go. I will put up $15 worth of an AMC gift card for the winner. Bam.
I'll throw in the other 10. We'll make it an even 25. All right. Somebody had a question?
What does Tony number 2 look like?
No, that's the point.
Tony number 2 is very secretive about his identity because he's got some sensitive issues associating his real life identity with his online persona.
CIA.
Maybe that. Yeah, he actually has a real life. He has a real life with interesting things in it to, you know, protect.
Why do you think he's never here? Yeah. He actually does stuff on Wednesday nights other than hang out, drink, and talk about movies.
I will put this on the table. Every time I see somebody in flannel, I'm like, that is Tony number 2. And Melina's like, that's kind of creepy, but I do the same thing now. Like, all right. So, 22 ASL. Is that Patrick who's a 58374?
Somebody's asking, is he sexy looking? Well, I can't speak to that,
I guess,
specifically, but I tell you, my 16-month-old, she can be half asleep. When he walks through the door, she pops her head up, turns it almost all the way around so she can see him, and just starts smiling. Like,
she doesn't want to go to bed.
Hey there.
No, you will not meet him at V3. He's not a gamer.
Alright.
You may have met him at the party beforehand.
Maybe.
I don't have much more to say on this movie. I mean, I thought it was... The story was good.
I was really hoping that Anthony would be here because I wanted to get his take on...
Musical.
On the music. And the aspect of the band.
He's a Scorsese fan. Of course he's not a gamer. What does that mean?
Which is odd because for Scorsese it's all about characters.
Yeah. It is weird. So, yeah, I would love to get his take on the music aspect because he's got actual opinions on music that I don't have.
Does his face look like a nipple?
Mostly, yes. I was having this conversation with Luke yesterday. Like, I was listening to music when he came in for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I have never seen you listen to music before. And I'm like, really? Yeah, you're right. I was like, I don't like music. And like, half the time in my car, it's just completely silent.
Which is just weird how you're judging the music in this movie and you don't like any music, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're right.
So who cares what you think?
Tony Mash, I do several podcasts. Lots of people care. I would even put my listenership in the thousands. There's an S on that thousand. That's
hey, right. I do tell him he's losing it. I got that S too, Chief. Not for this podcast, but for that other one, yeah.
You guys should do a podcast.
We're going to start a new podcast. We're recording an episode right after this. It's called I Do a Podcast. Podcast.
I do a podcast about that.
We're just going to talk about how we podcast. We're going to tell podcasting stories.
Podcasting stories.
Oh. All right.
I got nothing else here.
I don't think I have anything else either. If people have listened this long, though, I want to throw out, send us some ideas for movies you want us to talk about. And give us a compelling reason why we should talk about it. Like, if you send us a gift card for us to go see a movie, we'll probably go see it and talk about it.
I'm going to see Taken this weekend with my dad.
I've heard a lot of people are going to see that. I'm not interested.
Kicking ass.
It's like Qui-Gon Bronson is what it looks like to me. It just looks like another Death Wish kind of movie.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Revenge movies are just kind of meh.
Really? See, Melina loves,
I get
the Punisher, so she is all about the revenge story.
It has to be compelling, and there has to be a there has to be a moral ending for it. It has to end badly for the person who's seeking revenge.
Like the actual Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah.
Not the crappy movie we reviewed.
Exactly. I mean, if somebody's... For me, the perfect Punisher story is where the Punisher walks into a building, guns down the people who murdered his family, and the one guy says, "Oh yeah? Guess what? There was a kill switch," and the whole building just blows up.
Really?
And that's the end. Because you know what? The character's no longer interesting after that.
Yes.
The thing that makes Batman compelling is that it's not really about revenge, because he's really not taking revenge on the people that did it. He's moved beyond the vengeance into justice. Punisher's never been about that.
No.
And that's where it's just like it gets old.
So you're not a big fan of the vigilante plot.
No.
All right, okay, no. I can see that.
It's uninteresting as a character. Hmm. It's like the super goody good guy. It's that extreme. If there's no conflict in the character, who cares?
When your only motivation's revenge, there's nothing left when everyone's dead.
What in the world are they talking about?
They're talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, okay.
Watch Beverly Hills Chihuahua. I found your comments racist, 58374. I will not stand for them any longer.
we actually do have a DVD that was sent to me.
Uh-oh.
That I'm supposed to review.
What?
Opie Gets Laid.
No, I think they sent it to you and not me.
I think I'm going to pass it around, though.
That's all right. Speaking of which, have you heard from Netflix yet?
No, not yet.
It's getting about to be that time, and I don't think I can do without my Netflix subscription. You know what I watched recently? The Librarian.
That's the Noah Wiley series?
Yes. It was not bad.
I saw part of one of them. I saw like the last half hour of one of them. I was waiting for the next thing that was coming on, and I watched it. It was not bad. It was an Indiana Jones
light.
Yeah.
And Sonya Walger is really hot. I don't know why. She's not all that attractive. I don't know what attracts me to her, but
I'm not sure who you're speaking of. I'll have to look up a photo later.
She's the blonde. You don't watch Lost.
No, I don't.
Did you watch any of the Tell Me You Love Me? The HBO show? Or
I watched one episode of it.
Yeah, she was...
and it was just weird.
She wasn't the hot brunette chick. She was the hot blondish chick.
I have to watch. I have to look for something with her in it.
You guys should review some plot-based pornography. We can do Space Nuts.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
I bet it is. Is it anything like Space Balls?
Sonya Walger is not uncoupling, is she?
She's on Coupling.
I'm only two seasons in, so if she comes into the fourth season and replaces one of the main characters, that may be Flesh Gordon.
Oh my.
All right, we should probably stop recording.
Yeah, we probably should. Okay.
Mulholland Drive next week.
Next week. And